Hi, this is the Dark Tangent. The speech you're about to listen to was originally recorded at DEF CON 5 at the Aladdin Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1997. Now all rights are reserved except permission for educational non-profit use. If you have any questions about DEF CON or the copyright status, contact me at dtangent@defcon.org or the website at www.defcon.org. Now kick back and relax.
I filled my collection up on my mantle as coffee mugs. I know, Mr. Don't mess with Mr. Teague. Rub the head for luck. Oh, I pity the fool. Okay. Bruce near me for no introduction. It never occurred to me to have to follow that thing we had previously. But we'll do our best. Sorry? No. I actually don't have a I could use a shtick like that. If anyone wants to join the shtick, we can make something up. I'm going to spend the better part of an hour talking about cryptography, what it can do, and why it can't really do any of it. So I'm going to start out by talking about how cryptography fits in to the digital landscape. Well, what's good? People hear me in the back? Nod, shake your head, you're asleep. All right, good.
Does this work?
Oh, well, we have a lavalier, it doesn't work. All right, cryptography can do a lot of really cool stuff. Right, and this is my partial list. Protects privacy, provides anonymity, it does trust, authentication, integrity, fairness, gives you an audit trail. Essentially, it prevents lying and cheating. This is a really big deal on networks. But none of this is new. Sort of the big lie that the FBI is trying to foist on the people, that cryptography is a new thing that is giving people new evils. Nothing that's on that list. Sorry? I think the general consensus is that you're having a private conversation, get the hell out of here. But nothing cryptography does is new. Privacy, anonymity, trust, credentials, these are all things we have in the face-to-face world. What we're trying to do is try to take those primitives from the face-to-face world into the world of computer networks. And cryptography is going to be the tool that makes us do that. All of this is becoming really important. Right? A bunch of years ago, we had a few little networks. We had the bulletin boards, isolated seas of data. It's all becoming connected. Seeing more computers, faster computers, more networks, more interconnectivity. We're seeing one big network. We're seeing a lot of really cool stuff working on these networks. A lot more remote access, autonomous agents, distributed processing, content of real value on the net, stuff that has commercial value, LexisNexis, stock data, financial data, stuff people really care about, not just you know, esoteric technical stuff. Communications of real value, real business communications, real negotiations. We're getting to the point now where we've had witnesses at trials appear via tape, appear via video link. This can go on the net. But a lot of commerce. We had 2 years ago, there was no commerce on the net. Now there's some. Soon there's going to be a lot. Now, unfortunately, most of the stuff out there that protects privacy really kind of sucks. Right, most products don't use cryptography. Those that do it, actually, you know, Mudge's talk explains this. Most of the cryptography out there is like that, the Windows NT authentication. It was put in the last minute, it was done by amateurs, and it looks that way. It's hard to use, it's inflexible, it's full of bugs. If people can, they often disable the stuff. Most of the solutions you see don't scale. When they work in small groups, they don't work on the net. Often you find that a lot of products don't even solve the correct problem. They solve some problem that looks like the correct problem. They often create more problems than they solve. Right? Marketers come in and say, use this product, it'll solve your problems. It doesn't. And all this is put on top of bad operating systems. We're trying to put good security products on bad operating systems. That just doesn't work. But people buy this stuff anyway because they don't know better. But in our society, generally, we have government oversight to protect consumers in areas they don't have expertise. We have the FDA to protect consumers from bad food and bad drugs. We have the FAA, which supposedly regulates aircraft maintenance. There's no similar organization to protect people from buying crap security products. So they do, right? The corporate buyers don't know better. The NSA, the FBI, you know, has an active disinformation campaign making sure the stuff isn't good. So people get screwed. Now, unfortunately, this is going to get worse. Right? The trends aren't better. All the important stuff is being handled electronically today. Now, a few years ago, the important stuff went on paper. Nowadays, manual processing is the boring stuff. We're seeing a lot more financial applications in cyberspace, a lot more medical information in cyberspace, more legal and judicial databases being accessible. Right? And now we have companies that depend on the internet for their survival. And a few years ago, you could piss off companies by breaking into their computers. If you want now, you can take down Amazon.com. You can affect share price. That's different. That's new. There are a bunch of companies that need the net for their survival. And the net really isn't ready for that kind of... It isn't really ready to deal with that. Right. The newer technologies are less secure. The newer stuff is more complex. The newer stuff is new, so we don't understand how it works. We don't understand the security processes. The newer stuff is rushed to market quickly. There's no real time to examine a product. If I walk into a company and say, well, your security is mediocre, we'll fix it in 6 months, they're going to throw me out. They need to get to market. Right. The best stuff is the least secure stuff. Internet is less secure than a dedicated network. Cellular is less secure than landlines. The newer stuff is less secure. Telecommunications is diversifying. It allows you to find the weakest link. If it's going over cellular and then going over the landlines, you can pick your target. Mobile solutions are, of course, a lot nastier. And this stuff is happening faster and faster. The changes are coming quicker. This cycle of installing bad products is just revving up. Security goes against the philosophy of the net. The net wasn't designed for security. We're trying to put it in as a patch, and it's just not working. And security slows down progress. All right. So what are the threats? I mean, this is really the meat of the talk. The moral here is that, you know, you guys really aren't the threats, but there's a lot of threats out there that you touch on the periphery of, which is going to make you guys a lot more important. All right, your first approximation, none of the threats in the computer world are different than any of the threats in the face-to-face world. Right, everything's the same. Criminals will attack commerce systems. There'll be privacy violations. There'll be forgeries. There'll be misrepresentation. It's all the same stuff. So when you look at the threats, you just look at history. Nothing will be different. At the same time, there are three new things that the net is giving you that are going to make this stuff a lot scarier. Right? The first is automation. Nobody really cares if you can counterfeit nickels. You just can't make enough money. A bunch of years ago, we gave our old Intaglio printing presses to the Shah of Iran. When he was overthrown, the Ayatollah got them, and they've been printing U.S. currency quite effectively for a whole bunch of years. At this point, the FBI has thrown up their hands and said, look, we cannot protect these counterfeit bills. They're too good. That's why we have new $100 bills getting new 50s. At the same time, Treasury looks at it and says, they can't print enough money. They're running the presses 7 days a week, 365 days a year, to affect M1. So the problem isn't that bad. We'll solve it, but it's not critical to the nation. On the net, if you write a computer program, you can print, you know, money as you sleep. The damage can escalate a lot faster. No one cares if you can give a criminal attack that works 1 in a million times. You just can't do it enough to make money. On the net, maybe you can have 7 successes a day. Attacks and threats that fell below the radar in paper systems suddenly become a big deal on the net. Now, the great example of that is in the 70s, the bank employee that realized he could collect the fractions of pennies from people's interest. He made a lot of money before he was caught. The second thing is action at a distance. But all of our legal system is based on the jurisdiction, based on proximity. You have to go there. Like, Timothy McVeigh had to go to the federal building to blow it up. On the net, there's no sense of place. You can be in St. Petersburg and you can attack computers in Citibank. You can pick a country, and organized crime will do this. They'll pick a country with bad computer crime investigative units, with no good laws against it, and with no extradition treaties, and they'll launch their attacks from there. It's going to be a long time before we get homogeneous laws on this planet. And because the net goes everywhere, this will be a big problem. But of course, we have a problem of actually finding where the attackers come from. This is not easy. The third big problem we have is the speed in which attacks propagate. Right? Nobody cares if you can build a satellite TV decoder. Takes you a couple of months, you work in your basement, you deserve free TV, go have at it. If you can write a computer program that does it, you can post it on the net, 100,000 people can get it next week, you can make a big difference to a company's bottom line. We're at the point now where attacks against these systems could become commonplace because they can be automated and they can be propagated. A lot of the systems don't realize this. They're looking at the old threat models. We could take down Mondex. I don't know if they realize that. All right, who are the adversaries? Pretty much everybody, from national intelligence on down. The press is a big one. All right, now I want to look at some of the attacks. First is the criminal attack. Generally, the criminal attack is, how can I acquire the maximum financial resources by attacking the system? It's been done since forever. We'll see forgery, we'll see misrepresentation, replay repudiation, buying something later, denying you bought it. Generally, these attacks are opportunistic, often involving insiders, usually low-tech. These are not high-tech attacks. These are exploiting just dumb things. Minimum resources, they'll focus on the weak systems. And generally, people have a medium risk tolerance. They're willing to go to jail. Against electronic commerce, the stuff we're likely to see is the same stuff we've seen against commerce systems from the beginning of commerce. What's important to know here is that expect to see a lot more audit. It's kind of a myth in our society that we prevent crime. We don't. If someone wants to commit a crime, they just would. We try to detect crime after the fact, collect a body of evidence that can be used in the court of law to convict the guilty, and through that conviction and punishment, have some weird back channel to future prevention. Anyone who's building commerce systems needs to build them with that kind of thing in mind. Also, traditionally, we've been reactive in our fraud prevention. Visa installed online visa verification in response to fraud. Now they have AI systems looking at spending patterns. They send the Visa card and the PIN from different locations to prevent those sorts of fraud. Looking at ATM systems, you can watch the fraud attempts, the preventive mechanism, the fraud attempt, the preventive mechanism. Because the attacks can be contained, those systems can work that way. On the net, because you can automate your attacks and you can propagate them, that isn't good enough. We need to be proactive. We need to prevent the attacks before they occur. We need to contain disasters. No system's going to be perfect, and that's fine. Designers need to recognize that fundamentally all systems are hackable, but to make sure that hacking a system doesn't bring down the entire system. Identity theft is going to be a big deal. Expect in the next 5 years, the notion of electronic identity will become much more important. We've seen some identity theft where you can steal someone's, change their address, get credit cards in their name, get a mortgage in their name. Well, not a mortgage, I guess, renting apartments, getting a driver's license. this stuff has happened. This will become a lot worse. Right? For about 30 years, we sort of lived in the mythical world where mother's maiden name was actually a security measure. We're there no more, and we'll never get back there again. You know, something else has to take its place, and it's not going to be something easy. All right, privacy violations are nothing new. There are two kinds of privacy violations. The first one is a targeted attack, and that's where I want to know everything about this person or this company, and I'm going to use all my resources against the entity I want to attack. Well, cryptography can help, but only up to a point where you're going to use social engineering. Right? It'll prevent someone from getting into my network, but they can still break into my house. So what cryptography does is it protects non-invasive attacks. It forces the attacker to put himself at risk. This is the best we can do, and this is fine. The other kind of attack is data harvesting, where a criminal might want to know the name of every widow 60 years or older with more than $2 million in the bank who's given to more than six charities in the past 2 months. Right? They want that database. Or someone wants a database of everyone who takes AZT in this country. This is a big deal. This is going to the net, fishing through the sea of data, looking for stuff you want. Cryptography can protect against that kind of attack pretty much absolutely. Because if you can't read the data, you can't look at it, you can't figure out what it is you want. Even if it's crap cryptography, you can't decrypt everything. And if you don't know what you want, right, if every phone call is encrypted, there's no way to figure out what to listen to. Second kind of attack is a publicity attack. And I mean, some people here do this. We get this in cryptography every few months. And the basic idea is, how can I get my name on the front page of the New York Times by attacking this system? Right? Find a bug in Netscape, find a bug in Internet Explorer. But these work. When the Berkeley grad student random number generator Netscape bug became public, the Netscape people were talking about it, and they said, look, we calculated how much computer time it would take to break this, and we knew it wasn't worth it for anybody to do it. Right? But your typical attacker, who's has a publicity attack, is very skilled, has access to significant resources, not a lot of money. So against Netscape, the Berkeley grad students, they were sitting around a computer lab with lots of computers, and they had no social lives. I mean, they had a lot of incentive to break the system. They had the resources, and they could do it. Electronic vandalism is this kind of attack. And we've seen some of that. We're going to see more of it. It's going to become big business to take down someone's website. Denial of service is another one. I don't know if there'll be a talk about that here. This is hard to prevent. Right, the third kind of attack is a legal attack. This is probably the hardest one to deal with. And the goal here is I want to discredit the system to prove my client's innocence. So someone has been accused of fraud or some crime, and the defense attorney is hiring one of you guys as an expert witness to try to prove that the computer security system that has amassed the evidence against this client is bogus. Now, so the idea is not, we don't have to break the system. We just have to make it look bad. We don't have to prove the attack works. We just have to convince a jury of pretty unclued people that the attack might work. If you're being hired to do this, you have the skill. You're being paid probably a significant amount of money. You have access to a lot of resources. You're being given a lot of time. Right? This could be a $20 million intellectual property suit. So this is a very well-funded attack. In the UK, this has been used successfully against people prosecuted for ATM fraud. The defense attorneys have demanded pretty much all the security documentation from the banks. And the bank says, well, I can't show you that. It'll compromise security. So the person gets off. The system might be secure, but it's insecure against the discovery process. Right? We need the systems to be secure even if all the documentation is made public, because the legal system will make it public eventually. And the last thing is information warfare, which I probably shouldn't even put the slide up because Wynn is here. I think he trademarked a pair of words. This is likely to be a big deal. Right, very well-funded attack, extremely high risk tolerance. Someone has the front door of a car. Attackers have it easier. You know, our job is a lot easier than the job of the defenders. An attacker has to find one way in. A defender has to protect against every possible attack. Attackers can use techniques that the defenders never even considered. The attackers can use techniques that weren't even invented when the defenders built their system. The attackers can invent new mathematics. They can invent new computer science. And they don't have to follow the defender's threat model. There's a group of art thieves in the Bay Area that will target people's homes by going up to the wall with a chainsaw and cutting a hole in the wall. Doesn't matter what the alarm system looks like. These people are not playing by the rules of the alarm company. Right? Not playing by the rules is a really good attack. And it's hard to defend against someone not playing by the rules. All right, what can we do here? Hopefully you all know this. I mean, so this is sort of my basic two-listed cryptography, encryption, authentication.
Does cryptography stop chainsaw attacks?
Cryptography does not stop chainsaw attacks. So we can do a lot of cool stuff, right? We can do privacy, we can secure electronic commerce, non-repudiation, authentication, email, secure audit. We can do all this stuff. The mathematics for this works. The mathematics actually works really well. Pretty much, you know, on the scale of things, the mathematics is perfect. But the real moral is, so what? Like, the mathematics is great, the computers are okay, the networks really suck, and the people are just horrendous. And so how can I build a security system when all the underpinnings are worse than what I can do right? Right, so the reality is prevent the system from working properly. Implementation is really hard, even if you actually try to do things correctly. I guess Microsoft found that implementation is even harder if you do things sucky. Right, you can find mistakes, you know, half a megabyte away in the source code that will affect the security. I've seen systems that have good cryptography where the user interface breaks it. User interfaces out there probably didn't even know about the cryptography. Right? I mean, there's a lot of good stuff out there that's not being used properly. And unfortunately, you can't spec it right. Right? I mean, given any set of security criteria, I can design an insecure product that meets those criteria. Right? I can do it on purpose. It often happens by accident. Right? Just because a product is buzzword compliant doesn't mean anything. We use DES. So what? Okay, there's a lot of non-cryptography that sort of makes this all work. The first one is trust management. All of these systems, especially commerce systems, try to deal with trust. Who am I talking to? Should I accept this Visa transaction from them? Should I accept this stock trade from them? Right, eShwab, Merrill Lynch Online. You want to trade somebody else's portfolio? Have at it. You can do it. There's a lot of problems in dealing with trust. How we give trust out, how we accept trust, how we transfer trust. You could open up your wallet and you have a lot of tokens where companies have given you a token that shows a level of trust, right? Your Visa card, your driver's license, your library card, your passport. These are all very different trust models. Right now, the landscape of VeriSign IDs doesn't model that effectively. I don't know if anyone knows VeriSign. VeriSign sells digital IDs. What they'll do is they'll take a bucket of bits that represents a key that you know and a bucket of bits that represents who you are, put them together, and sign that they are a unit. And they also expressly say that they are not to be held liable for any problems resulting from that binding of those two things. So what exactly are they doing? They're pretty much doing exactly nothing. Unless they're willing to accept liability, their binding is useless. We need to see people who do certificates and transfer trust deal correctly with liabilities. This is all about liability. Who owns the liability, how it's laid off, how it's insured. For electronic commerce, a secure computer is one you've insured. Because you've taken your risk, you've managed it, you've quantified it, you've laid it off. You can do business. Visa gets a lot of credit card fraud a year. They get 10 times as many much losses due to personal bankruptcy. Credit card fraud almost doesn't matter. All right, the human-computer interface is a big problem. The first problem is human-computer transference. How can we have a legal system that's based on digital signatures when you can never prove what it is you signed? When I type PGP-S file name, what did I just do? When I look at a message in Eudora on my screen and digitally sign it, how do I know what the program actually signed? If the computer isn't trusted, the signature isn't trusted. The legal system is going to have to deal with this. Right? Unless you have trusted computers, you never know what you're really getting. And then we have the problem of interacting between the human and the computer. NSA has really good cryptography. John Walker made a good living photocopying key material and mailing it to the Russians. It didn't matter how good the cryptography was. Now, on the net, you're seeing two forces. Security works better when it's high up in the stack, near the application. But users hate that. They want it pushed down where they can't see it. Yeah, we really need both. We're not really getting either. Right, people find security intrusive. Some of you might have older relatives who remember when front door lock was installed in their house. It's really interesting to talk to them about how they felt that intruded in their natural right to walk up to their door and open their door. That had stopped, fish out a key, turn a lock. They really resented that. The same thing's happening with computer security. People resent having to deal with it. Right? People work around security measures. They need to get the job done, get rid of the security. They need to get the job done. And people can't make smart security decisions. But you're running Java and a dialog box comes up and says, warning, this might be a rogue application. No one has the faintest idea what to do. They're all quick, don't worry about it. Right, you're on a website and there's a button saying, click here to see the dancing pigs. The message comes up. People will pick dancing pigs over computer security every day. Doesn't matter. They just don't know enough how to make those decisions. A lot of work being done on secure perimeters. Smart cards, dongles, my God. Ignore the man behind the curtain. A lot of work being done in tamper resistance. Anybody who works in tamper resistance will tell you there's no such thing. The smart cards, PCMCA cards, secure ID cards, none of these things, none of the tamper resistance measures work against a determined attacker. Fundamentally, any system where the device itself and the secrets in the device are owned by different people is flawed. It will fail. Stored value cards that are anonymous, they're all breakable. And that's Visa Cash, and that's Mondex, and that's the Amex Proton system, and any of the others. They will not be able to survive unless they deal with the problem through some other means than tamper resistance. But the whole problem with key escrow, government access to key, this is a lot harder than it looks. Right? I can implement key backup because it's fundamentally in the best interest of the user to have it. When I want to implement government access to key, I'm trying to implement a system in the face of a hostile user. That's much harder to do. Is that someone waving at me? Hi. And the big moral here is we have to leverage our relationships. All good commerce systems are based on relationships. Visa, you have a relationship with Visa. Visa has a relationship with the merchants. Fraud can usually be detected because of this ongoing relationship. It's sort of my unfortunate belief that anonymous digital cash won't happen. Because it's not in anybody's financial interest to have it happen. People, common users don't need anonymity in their transactions. Right? They're willing to buy with a credit card. They're willing to buy with a check. They give up their anonymity every day. A few people want it. They'll pay handsomely for it. Everyone else won't get it because they don't want it. Banks won't offer it because there's higher risk, there's higher liability. The failure modes are worse unless there is a public outcry for it. And I just don't see one. All right, testing problem. It's really hard to test for security. Right, flaws can be anywhere in the system. Right, overflow flaws are just everywhere. Network flaws, they could be in the threat model, the design, the implementation, the user interface, how it's installed. They could be far away from the security parts of the software. You could have two secure systems interacting and together and cause new flaws. The flaws are invisible. Right, security is orthogonal to functionality. If I'm building a word processor, I want to see how well it prints. I just test it. If it prints, I know it works. I'm building a security product. I can encrypt, I can decrypt. It works. I don't know if it's secure. Just because it works doesn't mean it's secure. There is no such thing as a comprehensive security checklist. It is impossible to write one. Often the only feedback people get is through the New York Times. And no amount of beta testing will ever uncover a security flaw. Right? Experienced people can find flaws. Right? Testing for any given weakness is pretty easy. You look for it. Testing for all known weaknesses is very, very hard. And often no one has the budget for it. Testing for all possible weaknesses is pretty much impossible. Right? There are workable solutions. You hire experts to actually do the testing. And this is where you guys come in. You know, until now, your expertise has been interesting but marginal. You'd irritate companies at breaking into systems. Now it's commerce. Now it's real money. Now it makes a difference. The expertise you guys have is much more valuable to companies. They can actually put a dollar amount on it. If we get our security right, we will save $2 billion a year, or whatever. That makes you guys really valuable. Take your expertise and use it for good. People need it. Now, I've been to a lot of security conferences where vendors talk about their products and say how great they are. Now, here at Black Hat a couple of days ago, you actually see people who understand the systems a lot better than the people who design them. We're living in a world where the networks are more biological than physical. People who understand the systems, as an organism, are going to be extremely valuable in the next few years. Because as money starts moving onto these systems, they will be attached for profit. Let me do some editing here. All right, a little bit about the future, then we get out of here. All right, developments to watch. What's coming? What's good? I'd love to see real work at tamper-resistant hardware. I don't believe it. I'd like to be proven wrong. It really makes the job of security people a lot easier. You could assume there are boxes that can't be broken into. Biometrics, it's likely to be a big deal, but not in the way you think. Biometrics are really crap keys. You have to assume that the biometric terminal is hostile. You walk up to a point-of-sale terminal and put your finger on the terminal as a biometric. You have to assume it's been captured. And the failure modes kind of stink, right? You've got 10 keys, and when they're gone, you don't have any more. We're going to see a lot of work in trust management as people start understanding that this is a problem of liability and not of cryptography. We're already seeing a lot of work on internet standards. The big question to me is, we need the internet to facilitate the richness of human interaction. Right? We need personal anonymity, we need aliases, trust, reputations. All the things that our social fabric is based on need to be mirrored on the net, otherwise the net won't be used. So any one of our standards have to do all of these things, and eventually they will. These problems are much bigger than governments. Governments, in the end, cannot affect these. But we need a lot of work on human-computer interface, user-friendly key management, invisible security that actually works. We need more work in legal infrastructure. What does a digital signature mean? How does it work in a contract? How does it work in a purchase order? There are a bunch of states that have digital signature acts. Most of them are really lousy. For good lessons in history, look at the legal systems machinations dealing with the invention of the typewriter. What did a typewritten contract mean? What did it mean when you had a four-page typewritten contract and just signed the last page? There's about 20 years of case law to figure all that out. The same thing's going to happen here. We're legislating now, probably prematurely. But we need good criminal statutes to prosecute digital criminals in all jurisdictions. Right? Solve this problem of jurisdiction shopping. We need the anti-government cryptography restrictions. It's just making life uglier. But we're at the point now where the interests of the military are not in concert with the interests of society. Eventually it will be irrelevant. It's a slow battle. Right? By putting good security out there, yes, we are aiding criminals. But so what? We are aiding the honest people so much more. By some advances in cryptography, if people are paying attention, NIST is finally replacing DES. We're going to get the advanced encryption standard. They're soliciting proposed algorithms over the next year. There'll be a 1 or 2 year evaluation period. We'll pick a new standard. I've spoken to some people who are going to submit algorithms. We're likely to see some good stuff here. This is very exciting and neat. Elliptic curve cryptography is starting to be big now. Quantum cryptography, kind of neat lunatic fringe stuff that actually works. There's some new attacks, quantum cryptanalysis. This has the potential in our lifetime of making public key cryptography obsolete. I don't believe it'll happen, but I know when I say that, I don't know what I'm talking about. Right, watch for new infrastructures, certificate management, trust management. All right, in conclusion, the problem with bad cryptography is it looks exactly the same as good cryptography. You can't tell the difference. You read a product spec sheet, you talk to a product manager, you know nothing. That's sort of unfortunate. Right, today's successful attacks are often kept secret. If you want to build an aircraft, you can go to the FAA and read the written records of every aircraft mishap since the mid-30s. And aircraft designers can use that data to build good aircrafts. We have no such collection of data for computer security. Most break-ins are covered up because companies don't want to discuss them. Financial threat against banks, it's almost always hidden. Banks don't want you to know how insecure the stuff is. Now, even when the St. Petersburg attackers broke into Citibank, we knew what happened, we knew how much, we didn't know how. Right, FinCEN is starting to collect a database of attacks against financial systems. The reporting isn't very good and the data isn't being made public. I mean, one of the best things that the designers of systems can do is to come to places like here. Because here is a good repository of public data about how attacks actually work. Which is very different from attacks as the designers of the systems envisioned that they would work. In our society, you find pretty much across the board that the people who build it can destroy it also. If you ask any doctor how to untraceably poison somebody, he'll be able to tell you. If you ask an aircraft maintainer how to drop a 747 out of the sky and get away with it, he can tell you. A couple of months ago, Harper's Magazine ran an article about blowing up the Sands Hotel. They were interviewing the president of Controlled Demolitions, Inc., which has got to be the coolest company to work for, about what he does, which is blowing up buildings. And he's shaking his head and saying, I can drop every bridge in this country. I could drive a truck on the Verrazano Narrows Bridge, I could have a dirt bike in the back, I can drop the bridge, I can get away, they'd never catch me. But what's going on here is you need someone with the combination of the skill and the ethics. And thankfully, most people with the skill don't have the particular ethical makeup to destroy society. The net is different. Because these tools can be automated, because these tools can propagate, you can get to the point where someone could have the ability without the skill and without the ethics. Now, in order to blow up the federal building, Timothy McVeigh had to learn how to do it. He had to practice at a farm. He had to rent the van, fill it with explosives, drive it to the federal building, and get away. He had to be there to commit the crime. He had to put himself at risk at all of those points. And if you look at the prosecutor's case, the prosecutors tracked him through all of those stages. On the net, you don't have to be there. You don't have to put yourself at risk. Someone could put a website, click here to take down the internet. That's possible to do. That's scary. When we build these systems, we need to be sure that we understand the real threats, not just the threats we think they are. We need to design systems with good security in from the beginning, and systems that don't explode when they break. We want them to break gracefully. And to build systems that scale, because the net is scaling faster than anybody ever thought possible. Right? We don't need perfect solutions. You'll never have a perfect solution. You can always blow up a federal building. We need solutions that don't allow systems to be broken completely. I don't care if you can mint money. I care if you can take down the economy. So is prudence prepared for the worst? Like any system out there is going to be in place 20 years from now? You know, Landman is using DNS problems. Things are going to get worse before they get better. And I believe things will get better. But the problems are really not computer problems. And I'm going to end with a quote from Roger Needham, who used to run the computer laboratory at Cambridge. About a month ago, he was hired by Microsoft. If you think cryptography can solve your problem, then you don't understand your problem, and you don't understand cryptography. Thanks. Are there any questions? If there are real weird esoteric crypto questions, let me take them offline, because I know we're a little bit behind the schedule. I didn't say anything about auditability. It was in this slide I glossed over. Auditability is, to me, is key. And that's all about detecting crime versus preventing crime. We need very strong audit mechanisms. Right now, in a bunch of jurisdictions, computer audit data is considered hearsay and not admissible in court. That kind of sucks. We need good audit that can be used to convict. To me, audit is the most important thing, even more important than prevention mechanisms.
Legislation. Are there other countries that have legislation in place that are possibly better than ours?
And,
you know, are we looking at those other
countries'
legislation?
The question is about other countries' legislation. I'm really the wrong person to ask. There's a website that talks about cryptography regulations in other countries, and the URL is on my webpage. Oh, the one who's standing now. It's really a question about the details of trust. Trust management, we do it every day. Right? You pick up the phone and you're doing voice authentication to know the person at the other end. When you meet somebody, you use face recognition technology to know who they are. A lot of trust management is trying to mirror those things on an anonymous network where fundamentally everybody's ASCII looks the same. There's a lot of very weird complexities once you start thinking about trust management in those terms. I don't want to
spend 5 minutes answering a particular question, but these things are not easy. There are no easy answers to this stuff. The trust management that Visa needs is very different than the trust management a library needs.
The
question was about Applied Cryptography 3rd edition. I am still in denial. The problem is, I probably have to add another 500 pages and the publisher would shoot me. Two-volume books don't sell. So you have to understand the publishing industry. They sell white bricks. That's what they do. The only reason you ever go to a publisher is because they own trucks and they can get the white bricks to local distribution points. So they look for things that make their white bricks sell better. And having volume one, volume two, unless you're like Knuth, really depresses the sales of your white brick. So publishers don't do multi-volumes. Now, I might be able to get away with it, probably not. I want to wait a couple of years. We have an explosion of protocols out there. It'll die down. And once it does, I can rip out the stuff that's not really relevant, concentrate on the important stuff. It's really a bad time to do a third edition. The question is Web of Trust versus something like VeriSign? Web of Trust works well for where it works, which is groups of friends sending email. It will not work for commerce. Commerce is not based on a Web of Trust. Commerce is based on, this bank says you have an account there. Commerce is, by definition, people granting you trust based on either your history or some information about you. It's fundamentally an issue of managing liabilities. It's not about friends communicating. PGP approach works well in this application. It doesn't scale into commerce.
Who do you think ought to be evaluating security programs beyond the privacy databases that you mentioned?
The question is, who do I think should be evaluating security programs? You guys are probably the best at it. The vendors can't do it. The government won't do it until we have a reliable advocacy group for consumers. The best we can do is ad hoc analysis by people who know how to do it and want to do it. Right now, there's no other way. This is becoming important. I mean, that's what I want to drive this home. If commerce is important, privacy isn't. When I broke the digital cell phone privacy algorithm, the cell phone companies made some noise. You know, we got some noise in the press. 3 days later, 39 web designers killed themselves at Heaven's Gate, and we were off the news. If I broke their anti-cloning cryptography, I would have affected their bottom line pretty seriously. They would have made changes. Commerce is going to drive the security train. And they're going to drive it with a lot more force than has been driven before.
Do you think publication of source code and algorithms makes for more or less security?
Publication of source code always makes for more security. Because, as you know, keeping your source code secret doesn't really mean anything. There's no substitute for peer review. Remember, you can never say, this system is secure. All you could say is, I can't break it, and all of these other smart people can't break it either. The more smart people look at a system, the better confidence you have that it's secure. Question about, I think, that minimal trust protocol that prevents collusions. I don't know if I have a 30-second soundbite on that. Collusions are a big attack. Right? In the real world, we see lots of attacks that are 6 or 7 people, 3 of them are insiders. Preventing collusions is a good idea. But we're going to see voting on the internet within our lifetime. Already we've seen a mail-in election in Oregon for a national office. When you start seeing voting on the internet, this is a big deal. Right, on the net now, I can buy somebody's vote and make sure they deliver the goods. And there's a whole point of a voting booth. I can pay you money to vote the way I want, but when you go into that booth, your vote is secret. In Mexico, in the last few elections, they would often put the voting booths under trees, and the ruling party would have thugs in trees to make sure you're voting properly. But if you eliminate those sorts of attacks, votes are inherently secret. On the net, if I want your vote, I can give you money, and you can give me your voting key. I have successfully bought your vote. This is bad. God, how did I get off on that tangent?
In the situation you described with the certificate authorities, it really seems in many ways, based on the inherent problems with photography, you know, certainty that there will be any kind of...
Questions about certificate authorities and whether you can actually do them, given the uncertainties in photography. Yes, I do. Because we don't need perfect solutions. When you look at existing solutions, Visa cards, security is really mediocre. It works just fine. There's a lot of check fraud. It works just fine. You ever get something notarized? That's probably the most moronic security system I've ever seen. It works. Because it's commerce, you don't need perfection. You just need to manage your liability. Yes, I believe we're going to have good systems. They're not going to be the big VeriSign. Bye, Mr. T. You can throw me off whenever you want. I don't know who's running this schedule.
Dan, why are you off, Bruce?
That isn't fair. Who's next?
Are digital caches out there? Are any of them adequate? And so, which one do you
prefer? I don't think any of them are adequate. Question about digital cache systems out there? Right? I mean, even something like DigiCash, the math is perfect. The math is beautiful. So what? It's not about math. It's about computers, it's about networks, it's about people. I can't build a secure system on insecure foundations. All I can do is take the inherent security in the people and leverage that onto the networks. I can't make it better.
Do you have any data of you foresee general public or general powers moving from a reactive state to a proactive state?
The question is whether we're going to see moving from reactive to proactive. I guess the bad news is what I just set up here, most people don't understand. I do a lot of work for banks and credit card companies and brokerage houses. They don't understand that the risk profile on the net is different. They really think the same rules apply. They think they can field the system, and if there's fraud, they can fix it in 6 months. It's going to be a long time. We're going to need some pretty spectacular disasters. Right, we had a minor disaster with eSwap a couple of weeks ago, where you make stock trades and you wouldn't know if they went through for a few days. Which, like, if you were doing intraday trading strategies, it really sucked. This wasn't a security breach, this was a reliability breach. But, you know, someone starts trading other people's accounts, you'll see eSwap go down pretty quickly.
Who is liable? Is eSwap liable?
At that point, I believe eSwap just said, I'm sorry. Life's hard.
I have another question. There are new intranets that are coming into play, like Microsoft has all backs. Are there no liability issues set up for these types of...
The question is not intranets. No. I mean, when you buy a computer security product, read the fine print. We as a manufacturer make no claims this product is any good. They all say that. They do not accept liability. They're afraid to. They know it's not good. Intranets are going to be a big deal. There's a lot more of it. You know, 10 years ago, the nets were all separate. Now they're all together, protected by these weird things called firewalls. Or virtual private networks. You know, do they work? Well, most of the time. Is it good enough? Well, most of the time.
Speaking of the Web of Trust, how's the PGP key signing at DEFCON 5?
Question about Web of Trust and the PGP key signing at DEFCON 5. I know nothing about it. So it's going so poorly they didn't even tell me.
In the room next door.
It's in the room next door. Probably one of those hacked computers they're seizing control of. That's it? Oh, no, it's worth. I'll take one more and then I'll go home.
So if our credit card fraud limit liability is $50, is it something that we need to really be concerned
about? This is a good question. Question is about, if your credit card liability limit is $50, do you care? And actually, it isn't $50. If you called the credit company and said, you know, what is this stupid $50 charge? This was your fault. Get it out of it. They'll waive it. No, you don't care. All that matters in commerce systems is who owns the liability. You can throw your Visa cards across the room. Visa will pay for all four. Don't throw your ATM cards across the room, because if someone empties your account, you pay. It's very important to watch in all of these systems who owns the liability. These for credit cards, for checks, how the banks move liability back and forth as the amount goes through the clearing process is very different. Any commerce system needs to mirror this transfer of liability. And if you guys don't hold liability, you don't have to worry about it. If you hold liability, worry about it a lot. Sure.
Debit cards that look like Visa and MasterCard,
yeah.
And moving the liability back onto you,
the consumer? The debit cards look like Visa cards. Actually, you've always had the liability because they've been debit cards. They've been ATM cards. Visa just puts a bug on it, try to get some brand equity. So, no, they don't change liability. They might confuse the consumer about who owns the liability, which, like, isn't very good. But it's interesting. When I went and rented a car, there was a big sign at the Avis counter saying, we don't accept debit cards as for insurance. So I guess they've been burned a couple of times. I really should get off the stage. Thanks a lot.